I'm Sarah Reith with the Promise of Paradise Back to the Land Oral Histories Project, and we're at Grace Hudson Museum on June 1st. Can you introduce yourself?
I'm Laura Fugg.
So where were you born and where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in Fukuoka, Japan. Yeah, that was not the answer you expected. No, my father was fluent in Japanese, though he was an American, and he was not of Japanese extraction. But he studied what they then called Oriental languages at Berkeley, and he was really good at it. And when they drafted him for the World War II, they sent him to the Pacific Language School, and he got even better. So he ended up interrogating prisoners of war in Japan. And then he did it all over again. He learned Korean and did it all over again in Korea. So he stayed mostly in Japan and Korea. And I was, when they brought me back here, my mother and me and my brother stayed in Lafayette, California, the East Bay Area.
How old were you when you came back to America?
Less than a year.
Okay.
So I have no memories of Japan.
Okay. Yeah. So where were you when you decided to come to Mendocino County?
I'm still East Bay Area. I grew up in Lafayette and went to UC Berkeley and met a man there who grew up here, I said right here in Ukiah Redwood Valley, and he wanted to go back home. And I hated Berkeley. I was there during the Vietnam War and the Cambodian invasion and got tear gassed a few times, and People's Park happened, and it was pretty scary. There were tanks in the streets, and I got jumped a few times and had my apartment broken into, and it was just too much in your face awful stuff. And then at that time, when my brother and I left for college, my mother immediately sold the house and moved up to Washington. So there was it didn't feel like home. There was no place to go to ever. So I met this man who was raised here, and he wanted to go back home. And I had been up here to visit his family. It was a large family. He had four siblings and grandparents all living on the property in Redwood Valley. And I just thought, maybe this will be where I belong. And I just dove into it. So after I finished my master's, we just waited for that. And then the next day, we loaded up the old 53 pickup and rattled up Highway 101 and dumped it all off in Redwood Valley. We moved back into, his parents had said we could move in with them for a year while we built our own house on their land, which also seemed like a really great idea. And we moved into his family home with both of his parents, his grandfather, and three younger siblings. And we ended up living in the downstairs unfinished area. We had to walk outside to get up. No heat downstairs, one wood-burning stove upstairs. So we all congregated around the stove. And 5-10 years and three kids later, we finally moved out of that house. It was a disaster for the marriage, but Redwood Valley became home. It's the best home I've ever had.
So what were some of your first impressions when you came to Mendocino County?
I just loved being in a quiet rural place, and I liked we didn't meet a lot of people in the beginning. We were focused on his family, and I liked it. His mother was a disciple of Alan Chadwick, and she was really into organic gardening, and she had a huge garden and would go down there every day, and she had trees, and they had a vineyard, also an old Italian vineyard. And it was such, I can just remember, hearing, it reminded me of my childhood in the East Bay Area before it got really populated. Cicadas clicking in the summer and those hot, lazy days and, going to the swimming holes. it reminded me of all of the good kind of safe feeling stuff of growing up. And my mother did not garden. She was of Scottish, she was of Irish Welsh extraction and was raised in very abusive rural poverty in Oregon. And she did not want to have anybody see that she couldn't afford to buy vegetables in the store. So she would garden flowers, but never vegetables. And I had always wanted to garden vegetables. So this was my chance to, you know, dive into that kind of an experience.
So aside from the gardening, how did you figure out how to get food together to feed you and your family in this new rural setting where you were gardening? Did you do hunting, or did you...
It wasn't that dramatic. There was a Safeway in town. But I was an original member of the what became the co-op, the Homestead Exchange, and you know, that just seemed like a lot of fun to, you know, go. I mean, it was fun at that time to, you know, go into town in that warehouse on the railroad tracks off Gobi Street, and you know, getting their big truck would show up, and a bunch of people would climb into the truck and slit open 50-pound bags of wheat and oats and barley and cornmeal and all that kind of stuff and divide it up. That was what we had to do to be part of it. So anyway, yeah, so food was not much of a problem, but we preserved stuff. That I mean, we tried to be as independent as we could and grew just tons of stuff. And my mother-in-law and I would put up, I don't know, you know, 50 quarts of pears and 50 quarts of apples and applesauce and 50 quarts of apricot sauce. And just, we made pickles. And even though the UC Davis regulations came out about not doing cold packed pickles because they weren't safe anymore because of botulism, you had to process them, and the pickles came out so limp. And we still made pickles, and we made zucchini pickles, and I hate zucchini pickles, but we just had this stuff. We had a whole warehouse just full of home canned stuff, and I remember going down there just looking at it and feeling so proud, and I still do that. I raised my kids canning. The first baby, when she was about 7 months old, I would put her in the kitchen sink. It was summertime. And I'd fill the sink with cold water and apples and the baby. And her first job was, you know, washing the apples. She'd bounce them around. And then the next year, she would sit at the table with us. And the second kid was in the sink bouncing apples. And she would sit at the table, and she would hand apples to me and hand apples to my mother-in-law to core and peel. And she would hand my mother-in-law all the really nice ones, and she'd give me all the really ugly, wormy ones. So anyway, yeah, food was fun, and I enjoyed learning a lot about cooking and, you know, making stuff from scratch, and did a lot of that. And there was a big family, too, because I did most of the cooking. My mother-in-law was a little bit jealous of her garden. She wanted that to be her job, but she didn't like to cook, so I pretty much did the cooking. We essentially had, we never called it a commune, but it was sort of a family commune. And there were several of those, the Easterbrooks or Rancho Mariposa. We were friends with them because they were in the same situation as we were. And the Fries up Tom Kai, similar thing with, you know, three generations. And then the Adams in Hearst at Emmendale. We knew all of those other three families, and I don't think there were that many, you know, exclusively family, you know, compounds or whatever. So
you mentioned a little bit about your kids and how they helped with stuff. What was it like raising kids in this situation that was so different from the one that you grew up in? Did you send them to a special school or public schools? How did that work?
I looked at Waldorf education and kind of one of my kids did go there for a year, and I came to the conclusion that I'm paying all these taxes for public school whether I send my kids there or not. And if you send your kids to Waldorf school, you know, you do have to participate in two major fundraisers a year in addition to tuition. And I just thought about it, and I'd gone back to work at that point, and I just realized I can't do this. So we didn't do anything that interesting. We we just sent the kids to public school, and I always did crazy things with them, you know, on field trips and tried to make it interesting. And then we took them on family adventures, but normal school.
And what about home births or medical treatments? Did you get involved in homeopathic treatments or kind of home remedies that were being revived at that time?
There wasn't that much yet, at least as far as I know, because my kids were born. The first one was born in 1974, and the cutting edge at that time was, if you were going to do a hospital birth, was to have your, to be more or less in control of your own labor, to not do anesthetic, and to have your husband in the delivery room. And that was, at least here in Ukiah, that was just about unheard of in 1974. And I had to do some fighting. I did want to have the kids in the hospital because I'm a special education teacher and acutely aware of what can happen if the infant, suffers anoxia or anything else. I had too many students whose disabilities were the result of anoxia at birth, and I just felt like I couldn't risk that. So anyway, we did the hospital births, but it was we had Lamaze classes. I was one of the first wave of people who went through Lamaze classes here. And I had to fight quite a bit in the hospital during the delivery to not get anesthetized. That was what the doctor, the OBGYN, wanted to do. And I just had to keep telling him, no, I'm going to handle this.
I'm fine.
and they did, they were, not too sure about letting my husband in, but they ultimately did. So, we didn't do anything. I mean, I was not that aware of homeopathic, remedies or whatever, to go with childbirth. We just, and I think things like water births came later. And I know lots of people did end up having their kids on the farm. And I didn't make that choice.
What about building your house? You said you eventually moved out of your in-laws' house and built your own place.
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
Well, it was a relief. So we built a house up the hill from where they lived, and we built it ourselves, and the kids helped. They got to help hammer nails into the subflooring and, get up on the roof and hammer on the roof sheathing, things that wouldn't show. When we were building the house, we had a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old and then an infant. So, the two little kids, got lots of smashed thumbs doing that job. And my father-in-law got involved in the building. So we did 100% of it ourselves. And it, probably shouldn't tell anybody. It was not, it was more or less up to code, but it was under the radar. And my husband at that time worked for the planning department. So I'm not sure he ever got that one finaled. But it was a nice family project, though.
Was it a Class K or just?
That was a pretty normal house. It probably had too many windows to, to pass, nowadays the energy coefficient requirements and all that. But it was a pretty normal house. We were living in this kind of off, we weren't off the grid, we were on the grid. We had power, we had well water, and then when the Redwood Valley water system came through, they put a irrigation pipe down Uva Drive, and first thing we did was get connected to that. So we certainly weren't as off the, out of the mainstream as a lot of the people who came up here. So the house had normal bedrooms, and I was kind of envious of people who built, those sort of kind of, troll houses, and I couldn't talk my husband into doing anything too exciting.
Did the house survive the fire?
Yeah. Yeah, we got divorced after 5 years of living in that house, and I moved to a farmhouse on West Road, and it was pretty close. It was less than half a mile away from what burned, but I, of course, had to go out there and check it out the next day, and I realized that it had been saved, but that was scary.
Yeah. So what effect, when you look back on the Back to the Land movement, what effect do you think it had on your life now?
Oh, I think huge. Starting out in Berkeley, that recycling was starting there, and I was really part of that. And just the awareness that we're part of our environment, I was becoming very aware of that and active along those lines in Berkeley. So coming here, I really, from the very beginning, I wanted to do everything I could do without pesticides, and it really turned me into a person who, I worked very hard on the No GMO campaign, and not so directly, but I made art and donated that, and it was auctioned off to earn money for them. And I've just always been really as supportive as I possibly can be of any movements to keep out the pesticides, keep out the herbicides, keep as close to the, literally as close to the ground as we possibly can. So, yeah, and I've, teaching my kids to grow stuff and cook their own food. And my daughter is just like me. The family has another big piece of property on the coast in San Mateo County, south of Half Moon Bay. And she lives pretty much the way I lived in Redwood Valley. It's kind of at the end of the line. They are on the grid. They have power. But it's very, very remote. And she's homeschooling her kids. And they're growing an awful lot of what they do. And she cooks everything from scratch and, makes everything she possibly can. So, that was another part of this, that living in Redwood Valley, in addition to the gardening and the cooking, I even made the kids underwear. I made t-shirts, I made pants, I made everything that everybody wore. So that helped me feel, again, just more connected and less of a user and more of a, if not giver, at least more of a participator. And that has stuck with me forever. It's, another thing, when we moved to Redwood Valley, I was absolutely shocked. We had to buy a car, because in Berkeley, I made it with just a bicycle or on foot. I had a bicycle trailer. I could do my laundry with the bicycle. I could get to, their public transportation was really good, so I could get to where I needed to go, either, by bus or BART had come in by then. But up here, living out on the land, it was just a terrible shock that we had to have a car, and for everything, to get the kids to the doctor's office, take these trips into Safeway or what, to go to the Homestead Exchange, and so it was that was unfortunate. But and I still, to this day, now that I live in town, I'm real proud of myself because I keep the car in the driveway. I walk down here. I walk every place.
So talk a little bit about your artwork. It sounds like you sewed everything when you were first coming here and being a Back to the Lander, but what kind of art do you do now?
Well, now I do, it's art quilts. I did some art then. Working full-time and raising the three kids and doing all this cooking and stuff took up just about all the time. There wasn't any time for anything. Sewing their clothes was kind of an outlet for some creative energy. And making stuffed animals, I made most of their toys too. Finally, when the kids left home, and I had sold the farmhouse, so I didn't have to maintain acreage. In Ukiah, they measure your property in feet instead of acres. And I just went, hallelujah, what do I get to do with my time now? And then realized, oh, finally, I can go do the art that I've wanted to do. So that's really evolved. And interestingly, almost all the art I do is about the land and about what we can grow on our land. Those are the big themes. It's this, this incredibly beautiful county. So the plants and the food and the land, those are the big themes.
So moving out a little bit more generally, what impact do you think the Back to the Land movement had on the culture of Mendocino County?
Oh, I think it was enormous, because when we moved up here, we were pretty much at the beginning of it, and the people who lived here were loggers, and the people who lived in town, many of them worked for Masonite, so that's logging related. Obviously, the service industries, the schools and social services, and then the farmers were mostly old families, a lot of Italian people in Calpella. Some families who'd been here for many generations. And I think the back to the land movement really, I think a lot of people were very negative about all these dirty hippies. And then what I observed, though, was an awful lot of, in a lot of situations, people started communicating and working together. There was some subdivisions that were, back in the early 70s, the Board of Supervisors was pretty much controlled by real estate interests. And there were some huge subdivisions that were being planned, one in Covelo that, I think that one was called My Ranch, I can't remember which. And there were some others. And my husband's father was very active with other people of my generation in trying to stop those subdivisions, just because of the terrible planning. Brook Trails subdivision had gone in Willits, and people were beginning to realize how bad that could be. So the Environmental Quality Coalition was mostly people of the Back to the Land age, and they actually were able to stop this ridiculous thing from going in Covelo. So, and I also think that the logging industry changed because of the Back to the Landers, that I think that we were the ones who came with the ideas that sustainable harvesting would be a much better way to go than clear cutting. And it took a lot of years and a lot of doing, but that's what people in what loggers in California do now. They do sustainable harvest. So I think there was a big impact. And we had grapes and we sold them to vineyards, but I sold them to wineries, but I never was that intimately involved with any of that. So I don't know if we had any. Well, we certainly had some effect on growing grapes and other produce organically. And my family, the grapes they had were, somebody else was the manager, and the grapes were not grown organically until many, many years later. But the whole idea of organic gardening and, wanting to have a place where we could, a store where we could buy organic produce, which became the co-op. And then ultimately, even the big markets like Safeway has, an arguably organic section. So I'm not sure if Walmart does that yet. I never set foot in the place. But that was a huge outgrowth of the Back to the Land movement.
So is there any particular lesson from that time that you think should be revived, or anything that you're glad has been forgotten?
Well, I think that the stuff I really like, it doesn't need to be revived. It just needs to be continued, because, so much came out of it. All this effort to do things in a lighter on the land way, or a lighter on the environment way. And that didn't die away. That has become almost mainstream. Real Goods has, they've taken solar energy to where it is now. And again, organic farming and having organic produce in the stores, and it never went away. That's just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And solar, the logging, sustainable harvesting, is getting stronger. So I think that what started with our Back to the Land movement, and I think we take full credit for that. It was us that really changed a lot of things. And political activism, taking charge of how we want the county developed, that started, the real estate people were in charge of how they wanted the county developed, and we just came up with different ideas to try to, again, I think sustainability was the major theme.
Do you have a memory of anything that's like especially emblematic of that era, that when someone says back to the land or the 70s, is what pops into your mind?
Oh, I guess a couple of things. One of them is just skinny dipping. We didn't do that in the suburbs and the East Bay. I mean, it wasn't done. And, you know, coming up here, you go to a party at somebody's place and everything comes off, and it was just a hoot. And, you know, my kid generation are so much more prudish. They won't go skinny dipping, as far as I know. So anyway, now that's a big memory. And then just loving the harvest. I just absolutely adore it. And again, the memory is sort of a visceral one. And the smells of, hot dirt and hot apples in, baking in the sun with the cicadas clicking. It just seems so, it's peaceful, and it's very animated at the same time for me.
Well, is there anything that you'd like to add before you head off into your day?
I guess just, so much for me, this coming here felt like coming home. It was coming to a home that I had never had, but it took. And I think, it's the sense of community, and that's something else I think that came out of, people had church before, and maybe the Back to the Land movement is a different form of church, that, this sense of working together and celebrating together and eating together, and that continues in my life now. That's I do way more of that as an adult than I ever did growing up. So I think just that sense of community is a hugely important thing.
We've been listening to a lightly edited interview with Laura Fogg as part of Promise of Paradise Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. This program airs on KZYX at 3:30 on Thursday afternoons. You can also catch shorter excerpts during the news hour on Thursday mornings at 7:45 and 8:45, and again at 6 p.m. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, and Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.